You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. This is the UBC Happy Hour, a show that is all about what's happening on UBC's campus. This show is produced by the UBC Affairs Collective. If you like what you hear and you'd like to help make the show, or if there is something you would like to see covered on the show, send an email to ubcaffairs@citr.ca. I'm Lelaine, a volunteer of the Affairs Collective.
And I'm Alex Lenz. I'm the coordinator for the collective. And we have a really exciting episode today. We have lots of pre-recorded interviews that we've done. So we're going to be talking about Trans Day of Remembrance with the UBC Pride Collective. We're also going to be sitting down with an actor from Wives and Daughters, which is a play that's happening on UBC's campus. So yeah, we're really excited. Lelaine, did you get up to anything fun this week on campus?
No, I was just studying and working all week.
Yeah, the study grind is real right now. It hasn't been very fun for anyone. I had a paper due on Tuesday and I changed my topic Monday night. Mm-hmm. I had written the paper and then I was like, this is so bad, I need to redo it. And I had this moment of panic. Have you had any moments of panic this week?
I did my first presentation ever in university. And you know how you ask questions at the end? Nobody asked questions.
Oh, no.
It was heartbreaking.
You see, I'm the person in class who always asks a question because I don't want to because I know how it feels to be there. So I'm just I'll always think of a question to ask a group.
I wish you were there.
Yeah, if I had been there, I would have asked a question. I did something fun this week. CITR participated in a spelling bee on UBC campus. It was really random. It was really strange, actually. So basically, there were a bunch of different teams from kind of campus organizations. It was more faculty. So there was, the UBC library had a team. We had a team. And Arts Co-op had a team. So it was more kind of older. It wasn't a lot of students. I think it was more the older working population on UBC. We only got 8 out of 19 words right. So clearly we're not correct spellers at CITR. But the words were pretty hard. I think one of the words that we got right was Halcyon, and I think the only reason why we got it right was because there's an album by Deer Hunter called Halcyon Digest, and Deer Hunter is a really cool band, and I think, it's only natural that CITR would get a word that's associated with the band, right? Yeah. But the team that won was the UBC PhD English Student Association.
Of course.
Yeah, so they should have won. If we had won and they hadn't, I actually would have felt quite bad. So yeah, they did really well. They got 17 out of 19 words right, so they totally slayed us. But yeah, it was really fun. And yeah, it was kind of to raise awareness and funds for the United Way. And the woman who was hosting it was dressed up as a bee and she was just so awesome. Yeah, it was really fun. But yeah, so first up, so earlier this week, Sadie Lai, who's a contributor on the show, we sat down with the UBC Pride Collective to talk about Trans Day of Remembrance. So we sat down with Eden and Nodi from the collective. They were really cool. And so, yeah, we kind of talked to them about what the day is, but also some issues that trans students on campus might face. Here is the interview. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to the UBC Happy Hour. I'm Alex Lenz, and I'm joined by my companion.
Hi, I'm Sadie Lai.
And we are here today with two members from the UBC Pride Collective to talk about Trans Day of Remembrance. So before we begin, I'm Alex and I identify as a cisgender woman and I go by she or her.
I'm Sadie. I also identify as a cisgendered woman. I go by she and her.
And our guests today from the Pride Collective, who are we with today?
Hi, I'm Nodi. I use they, them pronouns.
And hi, I'm Eden. I'm a trans non-binary guy, and I use the pronouns he, him, or they, them.
Thank you.
So this coming Monday, November 20th, is Trans Day of Remembrance. So can you tell us about this day, maybe some of its history?
Yeah, sure. Trans Day of Remembrance is basically a memorial for trans people who have lost their lives in acts of transphobic violence. It started in 1999. There was a memorial organized by Gwendolyn Ann Smith in memory of Rita Hester, who was an African-American trans woman who was murdered in 1998. So now it's basically become an annual event. It takes place every November 20th and is characterized by usually candlelight vigils, but also things like art shows, small concerts, really anything that helps us remember community members who we've lost and also helps us feel a sense of resilience and solidarity.
So just a quick follow-up. For maybe some people who don't recognize the term, what is transphobia?
So transphobia is a discrimination against trans people or people who are perceived to be transgender. It's often very violent, and I'm speaking from a personal perspective here, not a great thing to experience.
So what is the Pride Collective doing to honor this day?
So this year we're holding some workshops on Friday, just the week before Trans Day of Remembrance. So we have one workshop for allies as well as trans people. And then we have another workshop which is exclusively for trans identified or otherwise non-cisgender community members. And then on Monday, the Trans Day of Remembrance Society in Vancouver is holding a candlelight vigil. So some of us might also be going out to that together.
Great. And what are some services that Pride Collective offers for trans students or trans members of the UBC community kind of throughout the year?
So Nodi and I host a discussion group every Thursday. It's the Trans and Gender Identities Discussion Group, which is basically open to any trans or not cisgender individuals on campus who feel the need to connect with other trans folks and, you know, form a sense of community. Other stuff that the Pride Collective does is we have a free gender empowerment store, which basically sells or gives away at a free cost gender-affirming chestwear like binders and breast forms for trans folks who find it difficult to access these resources.
Wow, I did not know that you guys had that. So is that like donated by kind of members of the community, or is that like kind of funds that you guys raised to support that?
Yes, to both of those. We initially started up using some of our budget, and we bought a lot of binders and breast forms. And then as people have been using this resource and have been learning more about it, they've donated some of their old stuff so that it kind of gets recycled and it's used by more people.
I do believe that we also take orders for items if people want something specific.
That's awesome. So what are some challenges that trans members of the community might face on campus specifically?
So some challenges that I have come across and that some of the other trans people in my circles have spoken about frequently are around naming and pronouncing. So this is specifically like in a classroom context where if you're working in small groups or something and you introduce yourself, people might use your dead name or your birth name, the one that you no longer use to talk about yourself. Or they might also not refer to you by your pronouns. And in my case, since I use they-them pronouns, I frequently get people saying that that's not really a legitimate kind of pronoun to use in the singular or something. And it's just really, really discouraging and disheartening. Another challenge is around access to gender-neutral washrooms. And we do have neutral stall washrooms around campus, but many of them are locked or are really, really frequently overoccupied, and this can be a challenge.
Just to follow up on that one, the gender-neutral washroom on the first floor of the Nest is permanently locked. I've never seen it open once in my life. So that's a very effective way of helping trans people. Thanks. I was living in the dorms last year, so this isn't really related to life in the classroom at UBC, but still living on campus, and I was placed in an all-girls floor, so that was particularly detrimental to my mental health, being constantly being told that I was a girl and that I should be using the women's washroom and had no right to be in the men's room, which that was very, it just felt really disheartening.
Yeah, interestingly, like before we sat down with you, Sadie and I had talked about kind of this interview, and we did like definitely talk about the issue of housing and how that would affect you know, gender non-conforming or trans people. So thank you for sharing that. And I definitely think that UBC can really step up its game in terms of housing. Sadie, do you want to maybe talk about how, because you're in first year now and living in dorms, and there, you guys were talking about something involving like a vote on bathrooms that UBC Housing is doing?
So in the one of the newer dormitories, I don't want to say, I don't know the name. It's like Cessium?
Okay.
We had talked about it earlier.
Cessnahan, yeah.
Okay. What is it? Sorry?
Cessnahan,
okay. In Cessium, one of the buildings in Totem Park, there are the opportunity to have gender-neutral bathrooms, but I know that in many cases it was taken to a vote whether or not these were actually going to be kind of done that way.
So from what I understood, the discussion around the gender-neutral washrooms in the residences was the RA has the option to bring up this discussion with the residents and put it to the vote whether or not to use the gender-neutral or to use the washroom on the floor as a gender-neutral space or not, and if it has to be unanimously agreed upon that it would be a gender-neutral washroom, and if one person disagreed, then it would be a single-gender space, which I find ridiculous because you're leaving it up to one person to decide if trans people in general can use this as a space where they can occupy.
Yeah, I think it's a very like interesting issue for UBC Housing to kind of explore, but and especially as like so many new housing like units are being built on campus, I think that UBC can, you know, make a much kind of stronger effort to make more inclusive spaces, because you know, Totem and Vanier were built in a different era, but you know, now we're kind of moving into a new era, and I think that you both bring up really good points about that. So that being said, kind of what are some steps that you have noticed UBC is maybe taking to kind of make more gender inclusive spaces, and what are some improvements that they could make?
So I feel like a lot bigger steps could be taken than are being currently taken. However, one of the major developments that I think was significant was that I think at some point in the last year, it became possible to enter preferred names over the SSC, and I believe it also became policy that professors and classmates then have to also respect your name if you are using a preferred name. And of course, this is like bound up with the fact that also international students may use other names besides the ones on the official records and so forth, so there was a bigger push from many quarters besides the trans community to have this. But at the same time, the fact that it's here now ends up serving us really well as well. I was also in a conversation with the Equity and Inclusion Office, and currently I know that they're trying to create a list of all of the washrooms on campus and come up with an updated list of which ones are gender neutral, which ones are gendered, which ones are single stall, multi-stall, which ones are locked and unlocked. And they're also advocating to have some of the locked single stall and neutral washrooms unlocked so that students can access them as well as faculty.
I do not know about the locked versus unlocked gender-neutral bathrooms, so could you elaborate on that?
Right. So basically, there are many washrooms on campus where if you look at a map of the campus, it'll say that they're gender-neutral, and this is because they're single-stall washrooms. However, they're actually locked, and so it serves no purpose for the vast majority of people on campus who might need a neutral stall washroom. And the reason for this is I believe that it had to do with the fact that these washrooms were supposed to be put aside just for faculty members, so they have a key and they can get in, but that the general student body doesn't have access to these. And this ends up being really inaccessible for students with disabilities who need access to a larger space, or also to trans students who might need a neutral space.
So if you want to use one of these bathrooms and it's locked, do you have to ask janitor or someone like in the building to access it?
Well, at that point, you're usually out of luck and have to go find somewhere else with an unlocked neutral stall washroom.
Yeah, you're like, no, I already peed my pants. Like, that was completely pointless.
Yeah, a lot of people I know just wouldn't go out of their way to try and find a help desk that might unlock a bathroom for you. Seems like a waste of time.
Yeah, that seems like a massive inconvenience. I sometimes swim at the UBC pool, and the new pool does have a very kind of large and prominent gender-neutral bathroom or change room, and I think it's, honestly, it gets used all the time, and I think it kind of is serving a purpose. Have you guys swam in the pool and used that space at all?
I've never been to the pool before, but I think that's great that they have a gender-neutral option for people who want to go swimming, because I know that like that's something that's definitely impeded me from accessing spaces like that before.
Yeah, it's really big. It's actually like much bigger than both the like men and women's change room. Well, I've only been also in the women's change room, so I imagine the men and the women's are the same. But it's also like actually really also practically convenient, because when someone's like cleaning the women's or the men's bathroom and they're closed, like people have another alternative. And I think it's also really nice for families who have like children who, you know, if you have like maybe like an 8-year-old and you, who's a, you know, a boy and you're a woman and you don't necessarily feel comfortable bringing them into the women's bathroom, like I think it works on so many more levels as well.
Yeah, like just gender-neutral options are beneficial to so many more people than like just your stereotypical image of a trans person. Okay, so just another point that I wanted to make was that the bathroom debate isn't actually about who gets to use any specific bathroom. It's more of a who has the right to certain public spaces, and by policing trans people and trans people's use of certain bathrooms is restricting their access to being in a public space.
So how can students get involved this weekend and in the future?
Well, I think a great place to begin is that the Pride Collective is always looking for more volunteers. So one way to get involved is always just to come by. Especially a great way to get introduced is on Thursdays from 6:30, we have our On the QT discussion group, which is basically a casual social space. We have free pizza and board games. It's a great way to meet everyone and find your feet within the collective.
Awesome. Thank you both so much for joining us. And yeah, you guys can find Pride Collective on Facebook. They also have a website. So yeah, you should check them out. So welcome back to UBC Happy Hour. You just listened to Sadie Lai and I interview two members of the UBC Pride Collective, Eden and Nodi. And Sadie's actually here now. She was a little bit late, but she's here.
Hello, I'm Sadie.
Yeah, so Sadie, how did you find that interview? Were there any things like that you were surprised about or particularly interesting?
I thought it was a really great interview, and really, I learned a lot. I had no idea the resources that were open to get at the chest binders and, you know, things to just make individuals feel more comfortable, and I thought that was a really awesome and interesting thing to learn.
Yeah, I didn't know that the UBC the Pride Collective had that option available, and I thought that that was really cool because those items I think can be quite expensive, and especially when you're a student, like, you know, you can't necessarily afford that, but those like items would really help you to kind of like create, you know, your identity. And yeah, I thought that that was really interesting. So basically I just wanted to go over a quick overview of the policy that UBC has in place concerning discrimination and harassment on campus. Because in the interview, Eden and Nodi did bring up transphobia. So if you're experiencing transphobia on campus or any other type of discrimination or harassment, you should know about policy number 3. So this is UBC's policy on discrimination and harassment. It's available online. So if you're interested in reading the full policy, it's readily available. So it came into effect in 1995, but it was recently amended in 2016 to include the term gender identity or expression. So previously, protection of trans people on campus was covered under the term sex. So according to Dr. Mary Bryson, who proposed the amendment, this change will make UBC's protection of trans people UBC's protection of trans people against discrimination and harassment more explicit. So this amendment was in line with BC's Human Rights Code, which was also modified in 2016. So yeah, if you're a member of the UBC community who has felt discriminated against or is feeling discriminated against, you can refer to this policy, and the school does have the responsibility and the obligation to address a complaint of harassment. So yeah, know your rights, and these policies are in place to hopefully protect you. But right now we're going to take a little bit of a music break. So Lelaine, who are we listening to?
The Cut Losses, a local band who are comprised of former UBC students Patrick Williams and Duncan Lee. They've seen a lot of success since their release. They released their 2016 EP, Lightning Dolphin. They've played the Fox Cabaret, which is a really cool East Van venue that was converted from a former porn film theater into a venue hall. We're going to listen to two tracks off Lightning Dolphin, Spending Time on My Own and I Don't Have a Clue.
Thank you. Have you ever wanted to learn something new or make your own clothes? We've got you covered. Here at the AMS Knitting and Sewing Club, we provide you lessons on knitting, crochet, and sewing, and a space to craft your own projects and meet with other people that share your passions. Like us on Facebook at AMS Knitting and Sewing Club.
Hello, UBC. OCRA is UBC's newest Residents Association Council, and we are thrilled to be a part of the community. Here at Orchard Commons, we value our residents, respect our community, and love catering events to our first years. Our amazing views of the ocean combined with the open kitchen make us a central location at UBC. Here's to a great year. Orchard Commons, the place to be. My name is Andre, and this has been brought to you by the Orchard Commons Residents Association.
Tired of begging for rides from your friends?
Bobby, I don't have time to take you to the soda shop again this week.
Lugging those groceries on the bus got you in a sweat?
Man, oh man, these bags of salt sure are hefty.
Being on campus without a car ain't easy, so check out Zipcar and get wheels when you want them. Join now to get your membership for only $20 at zipcar.ca/UBC.
For the best in funk, soul, surf, and more music, tune in to Jack Velvet's Suburban Jungle Show, Wednesday mornings from 8 to 10 at CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Add us on Twitter at Jack Velvet Radio, Jack Velvet's Suburban Jungle Show. Also available streaming and podcast at jackvelvet.net.
Hi, you are listening to The Happy Hour on CITR 101.9, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. This is the UBC Happy Hour, a show that is all about what's happening on UBC's campus. You just heard Spending Time on My Own and I Don't Have a Clue by Cut Losses off their 2016 EP Lightning Dolphin. Next up, collective contributor Amy Sandro is giving us her weekly arts update. She also sat down with Louis Lin, who is starring in Wives and Daughters, a play that is currently showing at the Frederick Wood Theater.
Hi there, this is Amy Sandro here with your weekly arts update. I'll be going through all the arts events happening this week at UBC. Starting today, Friday, November 17th, UBC Improv is having their Back to 2003 Improv show. So they'll be performing for the second week in a row with another show full of improvised comedy scenes and all the usual fun that they have. It's in Neville's Scarf, room 100. Doors are at 6:30. Show starts at 7, but they recommend coming earlier to get a spot. And it's $3 at the door and $4.50 online for tickets to get in. Also happening on Friday, University Singers and UBC Choral Union are premiering Jake Runestad's We Can Mend the Sky. This show tells a story of one immigrant's journey about finding hope and inner strength, and it's told through music, and it's happening in the Chan Center at 8 o'clock. It's $8 for a ticket, or you can get free tickets if you're a UBC student. So if you come in person 2 hours before the performance, you can get free rush tickets, but you have to bring a valid UBC student ID. So you can go see that for cheap if you'd like. Next, on Saturday, November 18th, the UBC Musical Theatre Troupe is presenting a brand new musical written by Sebastian Ochoa Mendoza. Sorry if I pronounced that wrong. It's called Before We Go. And this musical follows the residents of the fictional St. Peter's Home for the Terminally Ill as they form a choir in order to win $7,000 at a local talent show. And it's taking place in the Norman Rothstein Theater. It's playing both Saturday, November 18th and Sunday, November 19th. And both days will be a matinee at 2 and an evening show at 7. It's $15 for general tickets or $12 for student tickets. You can buy them at the door or online. Then on Sunday, November 19th, the Opera Tea series is continuing. So Opera Teas, they bring you closer to the performers on stage, performers being the UBC Opera Ensemble. So you can enjoy a concert of opera arias or song favorites in a very casual setting. So if you heard my little rant last week about opera and how much I love it now. This is a good way to see it in a definitely more casual way. And there'll be coffee, tea, and other light refreshments. And it's in the old auditorium at 2 p.m. For tickets, it's $28 for adults, $23 for seniors, and $15 for students. Then on Monday, the UBC Pottery Club is holding their annual fall pottery sale. So come out to the Nest, the main level, from 10 to 4, starting on the 20th, and it goes until the 23rd. So for 4 days, you can come out, look at some of the pottery that these students have made. There'll be stuff from mugs and plates to more intricate sculptures. So they're all handmade by UBC students or community members, and they're great gifts. So if you're still looking for Christmas gifts, or I guess getting a head start on it, it's pretty early still, this is a good place to look. So like I said before, in the Nest from 10 to 4 for 4 days, the 20th to the 23rd. Also on Monday, the Slam Poetry Club is having a writing workshop with Isaac Bond. He's a Canadian slam poet. He's pretty involved in slam poetry across Canada. So if you are a seasoned slam poet, or you're just bringing your first poem there ever, you come over there and they'll give you prompts and help and critique with your poems, just make you a better writer. And so this workshop is from 2 to 3 in room 2514 of the Nest. But you can stay an extra half hour to keep writing if you feel extra inspired. Also, there will be tea and instant coffee. So if you bring your own mug, you can partake in some of that. Finally, on Wednesday, November 22nd, the Scandinavian and Nordic Cultural Association are having a holiday arts and crafts event. So you just come out, have fun with decoration crafting, presumably with a Scandinavian theme. And it's from 4 to 6 p.m. in Buchanan Tower 9th Floor Lounge. Also happening this week, I talked about it last 2 weeks, I believe, Wives and Daughters is playing at the Frederick Wood Theatre. It's from Wednesday to Saturday until November 25th, so still have time to go and see it. I'm going and seeing it this Saturday. Adult tickets are $24.50, seniors $16.50, students $11.50, and youth $5. I've told you about Wives and Daughters the past 2 weeks, but this week I did an interview with one of the stars of that production, Louis Lin, and stay tuned and you will hear my interview with him and find out a bit more about the play. Hi there, this is Amy Shandro here with CITR. I'm here with Louis Lin. He is starring in the UBC Theatre production of Wives and Daughters. Hi, Louis.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course. So, first question, give us a little bit of a synopsis of the play, just so we know what we're seeing, what we're going to be talking about.
Okay, cool. Well, not to give too much away here, but basically this play is an adaptation of a novel, and it follows a young girl named Molly, and it's sort of a coming-of-age story. It follows her, basically her dad remarries, and she gets a new stepmom, and she has a new stepsister, and she holds this secret inside her of her in being sort of in love with her best friend Roger, which is the character that I'm playing, and sort of this play kind of follows her journey through that and see basically her journey as a daughter and how it kind of progresses.
Great, that sounds really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Kind of sounds like a Jane Austen novel. I know it's not Jane Austen, but mm-hmm. Is it kind of like similar, like?
It is. It is sort of the vibe, because it's a period novel as well, and the novel was a couple hundred years old. Yeah, mm-hmm. And yeah.
It's really cool. Mm-hmm. What's it like rehearsing a period piece? How does that bring like different challenges or mm-hmm. make stuff easier or more fun?
Definitely I can't speak for everyone, but for me, obviously the biggest challenge was to sort of move out of that contemporary body and contemporary vocal pattern. That was the biggest challenge for me, actually, the vocal pattern, because sort of the biggest thing that our vocal coach was working with us on this piece was that sort of people in this century, they kind of talk and you kind of pull your voice back sort of like how I'm talking right now.
Yeah.
You like talk, and then you pull your voice back. And also the second thing is that I know whining is not the best word to describe it, but we do whine a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, and so these characters are, you kind of have to think, I don't know if anyone's watched Downton Abbey. If you haven't, you're missing out.
Of course, please, get on it.
Yeah. But you have that hierarchy in the society, and the hierarchy is very important, and people do think a lot faster. It's the same thing, like, when you get a script, like, you have the lines on page, but you don't get the line. You think about what you're going to say, and then you say it. So in real life, kind of how you're asking me the question, as you're asking me, I'm sort of already thinking the answer, and then I respond right away.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the biggest thing that we were kind of working on to get in those characters' bodies, which kind of, not sidetracked, but kind of, it was really helpful to get in the costumes, because the girls had to wear, they have to wear corsets.
Oh my gosh.
Which is a challenge. Like, honestly, I can't speak for them, and I can only imagine the sort of, it takes a lot of effort to get in those corsets and to walk and act and breathe in those corsets. Mm-hmm. But yesterday we had a talk back. We kind of got into that, of how it really, putting on the costume, because we don't usually get the costume until dress rehearsal, which is 2 days before preview, right?
Mm-hmm.
But getting to those costumes kind of is the last piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of get in those characters' bodies, and you kind of realize, wow, this is why everybody was so, like, you have to be so, like, uptight, and, like, you have to be so formal.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So you had a vocal coach. Was that just one of the teachers here at UBC, or did you bring someone in from the outside?
It depends on the show. So we do have a vocal voice teacher in our program, Gail Murphy. We love her. We call her Mama Gail. But for this show, we brought in Liz, and she's an amazing, amazing vocal coach. And, you know, it depends. Yeah. So like I said, it kind of depends on the show. But she was so patient with all of us, and she kind of explained to us why some of us sound more modern than the others. Because we do, for this show, like, our main purpose with the directors, we kind of wanted to bring a contemporary feel to a period piece. So that was always our biggest goal. But we still kind of want to keep the audience in that world.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so she was kind of working with us individually, kind of teaching us how to recognize the pattern that we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest thing, that the note that I got, was that they kind of think through the line as they talk. So they don't just chop off the thought. So if they have one thought, they speak it till the end.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was really interesting.
That's a really interesting point to think about.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
And you talked about costumes earlier.
Mm-hmm.
All those costumes are made by the BFA design student, theater design students.
Yes.
That's really cool. I just think it's great. What's it like working with, like, fellow students, and they're doing quality work, obviously, but yeah, just working with people your age in a production.
Yeah.
In all places, for the most part.
Yeah. I think it is a... it is really interesting, because you rarely get these kind of opportunities that you kind of have this communal learning experience, right? The designers are learning, the actors are learning, you know? And the costume designer, her name is Liz Gao.
Mm-hmm.
She's amazing. She was so open to ideas, and I'm excited for you to see it on Saturday.
I'm excited to see it.
The costumes are absolutely beautiful. We had a lot more costumes, but we kind of wanted to simplify it. Once you see it, you'll know, because we have a lot of transitions in between and a lot of movements and stuff. So we kind of cut a lot of the costume changes, but it is very true to the period. And a lot of the pieces, they build it from scratch.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's amazing how they kind of, it's a very collaborative environment, and it is just not only the costume, really, the set design and the lighting design, the sound design. Mm-hmm. My parents came yesterday, and they were just totally blown. They were like, well, who did you hire? And I was like, no, they're all students. And yeah, they were really amazed by the amount of, the thing is, I think, the designers, they don't get enough credit. They never do, you know? Because as actors, we come at the end of the play, we come and bow, and everybody clap. But honestly, the amount of work that the designers put in, and the stage management, the directors, it's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we will leave the theater, especially during tech week, we'll leave the theater and they're still there doing notes and like making adjustments, and they're there earlier than we do. So yeah. Well, if anything, yeah, the design is going to be amazing.
I like that. Let's
yeah.
Give it a round.
Yeah. Yes, designers. Yes.
Great. So, yeah, it being a period piece, so you've had all the physicalities and mm-hmm. the vocal coaching. Did you learn anything about the history? And I especially wanted to note the description for the play. I was talking about how she was a feminist.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The original author, Elizabeth Gaskell, mm-hmm. was a feminist for her time. And
right.
How does that incorporate into the play, and how does it relate to today?
I think, and that's why it's so important, because this story, even though it was published so long ago, right? Mm-hmm. The novel was published so long ago, it is timeless in a lot of way, because you see Molly kind of I don't know if resisting is the right word,
mm-hmm.
but you see Molly kind of like break through this mold of the society's conventional like beauty and you know what a woman should be,
mm-hmm.
and Molly really is a really interesting character, because the way my character Roger kind of bonds with her and the way we kind of become best friends is through our mutual interest
mm-hmm.
Of science.
Oh wow!
Yes,
I love that.
Yeah, so Molly is very interested in science, and we bond over, I'm a botanist. So my character, I don't know if anyone knows, my character is sort of based on Charles Darwin.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if this is correct or not.
That's okay.
It is. The original author was cousin with Charles Darwin. And
oh,
that's why
wow.
she kind of based the character on Charles Darwin. And so he's a very intelligent character.
Mm.
But bringing back to Molly, she kind of has this interest that she took on this interest that, you know, back then, not a lot of people would have thought of.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really her journey kind of through that, and her kind of listening to her inner self.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the story is so timeless, right? Because it is still a lot of, like, even now, there's a lot of constrictions
mm-hmm.
and you know, oh, boy should do this and girl should do that.
Yeah.
And there are trailblazers that down the road would say, no, this is what I want to do and this is what inspires me and I am going to pursue that, and you can get what you want in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
This has made me 10 times more excited to see the play. Yeah. So any other details that you want to give about the play, letting people out there know? Anything else you want to say about it?
So it is a world premiere. We adapted it by Jacqueline Ferkens. It's, mm-hmm. She's a professor at UBC. She adapted the novel. So it is a brand new play. You can't see it anywhere else. We previewed last week, and now we're running for 2 more weeks, so just 7 more shows.
Okay.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and our closing would be in November 25th. You can buy the tickets at Theater UBC.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, just come see the show, enjoy the journey with us. It's amazing design, and the cast worked really hard on this, and the directors, Courtney. I'm gonna shout out to Courtney. She's amazing, and she put in so much effort and work and love to everything that's involved.
Yeah. All right, great. Yeah. Thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you.
It was really, really enlightening. I can't even get over how excited I am.
Thank you so much.
All right. This is Amy Shandro for CITR.
You're listening to UBC Happy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM. You just heard Amy Shandro interview Louis Lin, an actor from Wives and Daughters. Next up, Jen Brulee is here with their segment Point Blank. Sorry.
Hi, you're listening to 101.9 CITR Radio on unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. My name is Jennifer Brulee, and this is Point Blank, a weekly radio series where the news is taken seriously, but the jokes aren't. On this week's episode, the top reasons to stay in school. As I enter into my final year of university, hopefully,
gearing up for graduation and a pat on the back for a job well done, and the piece of paper that congratulates me on spending countless hours having exam stress, worrying about the competition, social media, career anxiety, long commutes to campus, and money worries. And I mean, this is bad. But you know what? I would rather endure the student suffering over the real world. From what I hear, it's a jungle out there. Welcome to the jungle. It gets worse here every day. And in the perspective of Professor Jen Moss, student life is not that bad.
This time in your life will go by fast, and you'll look back on it and go, wow, I had so much luxury then to sort of sit around and consider ideas instead of having like the kind of daily grind to earn a buck. Really take advantage of that and really stretch out into it and enjoy it, because it's a particular phase in your life that won't go on forever. Usually.
And I'm in agreement with Jen, because once you graduate, you no longer have the protection of student status. Although you won't have assignments due on Sunday, it just transforms itself into a different form of assignment, called a job. So here are the reasons to stay in school. Number one, jobs are hard to find. You're either overqualified, underexperienced, or just beat up by the insane competition. As well, before you do a degree, you're supposed to check to see if your field is hiring. But that's a whole other issue, the problem with the school system. Number two, you have to get a job and you have to go to that job. You can't skip like you did in first year because of your hangover from the pit. Number three, having student benefits. You can stay under your parents until you're 25, but after that, you need to have a job with benefits. And as I said, finding a job is hard enough. Finding one with benefits is even harder. A lot of young people don't understand why benefits are so important. And to that, I ask them, do you have teeth? Well, teeth are expensive. Reason number four, when you're home for the holidays and your family is asking you questions about your life, you always have a simple answer. What do you do?
I'm a student.
Why don't you own a car?
I'm a student.
What are you going to do after you graduate?
Well, I think I chose the wrong major, so I'm going to go back to school.
Have you thought about having kids or starting a family?
No, I don't really have time. I'm a student.
Well, are you dating anyone?
No, I'm a student.
Have you thought about saving for retirement?
I haven't even started working yet because I'm a student.
Also, how can you afford to get your nails done every week?
Student discount?
Number five, the comfort of knowing that you will be in a classroom in September. You've probably spent the last 20 Septembers in school. Why change that? Number six, you can say you have a PhD in omnomology. Use this as an icebreaker to explain the knowledge that you've gained and to reiterate how unemployable you are. And number seven, the top reason to always stay in school is that you never have to pay back your student loan. So, with all these reasons, and when you really think about it, stress level student is not that bad. As the term nears an end, and everyone has final papers and exams that are coming up, Professor Jen Moss has a great piece of advice for you.
I shouldn't really say this, but actually your grades don't matter that much. Because the thing is, after university, all an employer wants to know is, do you have a degree in X? They're not going to say, how come you got a C- on your third term paper in that subject?
So there you have it. And if this didn't bring a smile to your face, you can go pet a puppy. But whatever you decide to do, make the most of it. My name is Jennifer Brule, and at Point Blank, stay in school.
Thanks for listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. You just listened to a piece about why to stay in school. This is, again, the UBC Happy Hour, and you can find all episodes podcasted online at citr.ca. If you like what you heard and want to help make the show, send us an email at ubcaffairs@citr.ca. We'll catch you all next week.
All aboard the outrage train. You can stay afraid.